Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I like doing it. You know, I love running routes.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
Looking forward to facing your mom at some point.
Last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
I've never had no bad queso, really.
It's Tuesday, March 14th. You're probably listening to this on March 15th because we're taping this thing around 4:30 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday afternoon. If we've missed any big news, we promise we'll get to that on Thursday's pod or in a potential emergency pod if we get some breaking news about a certain quarterback at some point. But we got a lot to get to today because we have not talked to you since last week, and a lot of things have happened. Joining me to do all that is 4for4's very own John Daigle. Daigle, what's going on, buddy?
Have not talked to you since last week, but you and I have not potted together since last year. So I'm very excited to be here with you.
Yeah, it is. It has been some time, man. And this has been a good time to get you on here, man, because there's so much going on. Daigle, I am such I try to do the right thing here. I try to be a good Yahoo employee, a good reception perception website provider. And this year, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, in the off season, we're going to do breaking news, emergency pods when big things happen. We're going to get those things out there so that we can be kind of current. We can kind of be in the zeitgeist, if you will. We're going to get those things out there. And also, by the way, for reception perception, when big name wide receivers get traded or new quarterbacks go to their teams, I'm going to put a profile up like the next day. And of course, the Bears trade happens with DJ Moore on Friday late afternoon, and I'm in Temecula on a wine vacation with my wife, and I certainly am not about to be like, hey, I know I got this whole thing planned for us, but actually I'm going to have to cancel all that and do podcasts and chart receivers and stuff. So wasn't able to do any of that. We're going to talk about it all here today. So I appreciate you being the one to do this with me.
Excited for that. And that was the first major move of the offseason. Arguably, that's the one we've been waiting for because that trade obviously entails the next dominoes falling at number two, number three, number four overall in the draft. So yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, that's a big one. It's a big one for me to miss for all of that. Anyways, let's get right into that. But before we do, actually, let's talk Aaron Rodgers status update. As of right now, as of this moment, there's nothing. There's nothing as of yet. We had a Trey Wingo tweet on that was Monday, you know, saying that the deal was done. Nothing has officially happened yet. The status update right now for Rodgers is that the Jets have been deep in restructure mode. And according to Diana Russini, Aaron Rodgers provided the Jets with a wish list of free agents that he would like them to target and acquire. It includes Randall Cobb, Alan Lazard, Mercedes Lewis, and Odell Beckham Jr. One for four so far, Daigle. The Jets got Alan Lazard on a 4-year, $44 million deal. And we know that Aaron Rodgers will be on Pat McAfee tomorrow, potentially to announce this or to potentially just kick this thing down the road even further.
And it's tough to look at from a fantasy standpoint because we can't quantify if he's going or how he's going to play well, assuming he goes to the Jets next year. Because last year, we know he only had one finish inside the top 10 among quarterbacks all year long. And he had some soft spots down the stretch, even against the Cowboys, which everyone remembers because he averaged over 10 yards per attempt. But even then, just roughly over 200 yards passing and still wasn't really an explosive quarterback. He played the Rams, he played the Titans, and still didn't get there as a QB1 in fantasy. So really what you're asking is the amount of spite he will have in being moved with a fresh start to a new team, will that suddenly make him a QB1? And I want to doubt it initially, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to be avoiding Garrett Wilson, right? Like, we're not avoiding Garrett Wilson. We've seen it in your perception. We saw him last year carry the team with that 23.7% target per route run rate. And so, of course, I'm still going to be banking on him. But beyond that, Alan Lazard signing with the Jets and joining Aaron Rodgers, basically just chemistry is what we're looking at. Like 14 touchdowns the last two seasons from Rodgers is amazing. But now we know Wilson's talent will likely usurp and just cancel out Lazard and make him more of a sporadic boom bust player. And so that's really the concern here.
Yeah. And Lazard too, my mentions have not enjoyed my little heel turn to like wide receiver blocking trutherism over the last couple of weeks. Nobody has enjoyed this little heel turn I'm doing here, but Lazard is a really good blocker. I like that. Like, the Packers actually used him almost in a tight end-esque way at certain times. That is kind of a nice fit here with what the Jets want to do on offense. You know, I know they're changing offensive coordinators from Matt LaFleur to Nathaniel Hackett, but there should still be a lot of system symmetry between these two offenses. And I do like the way Alan Lazard fits in that regard. You know, he's probably going to be like a big slot and hulking flanker at certain times outside. He's not a separator at all. Again, you mentioned reception perception. The charts would show that. He's not a guy that gets open, but can win in tight spaces, can win in the red zone. And like with Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore, since it's clearly like they're going to kind of do like a one-for-one replacement with Corey Davis, Lazard's basically just going to step into his position on the roster. It seems like he's probably going to be the odd man out here. They needed some heft there. And I think that these two guys, Davis and Lazard, are actually similar. So if Lazard equals Davis, but then Lazard also means you get Rodgers, I think Rodgers plus Lazard is greater than Davis, if my math checks out there.
And to your point, they can save $10.5 million against the cap by cutting Corey Davis. That's why we both think that's going to happen. And I completely agree. I do the free agency tracker where I put analysis on every signing, including defensive tackles and cornerbacks, for example.
God bless
you, buddy.
For
football. And I'm very tired, by the way. And when it came to the Lazard signing, and I'm sitting there trying to have a fantasy spin, I'm not joking. I sat on it for 20 minutes, and the only sentence that came out initially was, he's got that dog in him. Because that's the best way you can explain for Lazard. Having said that, I do think it's impressive that, remember, once he and Christian Watson got healthy from week 10 on, that Cowboys game on, for the rest of the year in their last eight games together, it was still Lazard having that chemistry with Rodgers, who averaged 6.7 targets, two more per game than Christian Watson's 4.7 in that time. Watson, of course, led the team with seven receiving touchdowns, obviously the much more explosive profile. But again, Lazard still has a high floor. It's just a matter of when his ceiling is going to hit, I think is going to be unpredictable with the Jets.
It is just hilarious that, like, the two positions on the roster that the Jets probably didn't need, like, a full makeover was wide receiver and tight end, and Rodgers' little ransom note here is all wide receivers and tight ends. But that is not surprising given the guy we're talking about here. Let's move back into that first overall pick trade. Obviously, everybody knows the terms by now. The Bears get the 9th overall pick in this year's draft, the 61st overall pick in this year's draft, a first-round pick in 2024, and a second-round pick in 25, and most importantly for our purposes here, Daigle, the Panthers send the Chicago Bears wide receiver DJ Moore. The Bears have made a flurry of free agent moves since then. We know that they are going to – they got to do a lot of work just to get to the salary cap floor. They signed linebacker Tremaine Edmonds to a big deal, TJ Edwards to a decent deal as well, Nate Davis, guard from Tennessee, on a three-year, $30 million deal. And the Panthers – now the owners of the first overall pick, they signed Andy Dalton to probably be the veteran mentor, maybe sort of placeholder for this guy at the first overall pick. Before we get to the Panthers side of it, let's talk about the Bears here. I think the obvious initial instinct is, oh, the Bears, you know, they fleeced the Panthers. But it's probably just because the guy we know in DJ Moore is in on the trade here. On the DJ Moore part of it, how are you feeling about him now as a member of the Chicago Bears? Where are you at with DJ Moore and how he's going to help out Justin Fields?
Very big on DJ Moore, and I don't know how you cannot be, because I try to step back and take a big picture view of regression, of what's going to happen for offenses this upcoming year. And the way I look at Chicago is that we take last year's offense, which averaged 22.2 pass attempts per game, literally the fewest of the 21st century and the fewest since the 1979 Kansas City Chiefs, who neither of us watched play a single snap. So that's how rare Chicago's passing output was last year. Having said that, since we don't have much offense like that to compare the Bears to, I just bump up the rates. I say, okay, at least we know over the last decade, 16 teams have averaged 28 pass attempts or fewer per game. And in that span over the last decade, of those 16 teams, 13 of 16 averaged more pass attempts per game the following year. Those teams averaged 31.4 per game the following year. And then more importantly, they saw a bump of over four pass attempts per game the next season. So what that tells us is, if we're just looking at a bigger sample, the Bears are naturally, logically going to pass more. And so we're already putting the ball in Justin Fields' hands more. And then remember, whenever Luke Getsy figured this out, whenever they started scheming more carries, concertedly for Justin Fields, that's when he finished as a QB1, top 12 finish, in 10 of his last 11 starts, including 5 top 5 finishes and 2 finishes the overall QB1 of the week. And so, honestly, with DJ Moore added to this mix, and assuming there's going to be natural regression in the team's passing game, the volume of their output, I don't know how you can't put Fields as a top 3 quarterback genuinely right now, because we think he's going to have the ball in his hands as much as Josh Allen and still provide those double-digit carries with explosive runs weekly.
The 2022 Philadelphia Eagles really taught me a lesson in being, you know, being able to use my imagination when projecting offenses, because that was the line that everybody said about the Eagles last year. Well, they finished dead last in the NFL in pass attempts, So it's like, no kidding. They have Jalen Reagor, you know, and now they're taking him out of the mix and they're putting AJ Brown there. Like, that's a huge difference. Now, I don't feel the same way about DJ Moore as I did about Stephon Diggs before he was traded and AJ Brown before he was traded. And I talk about those two guys specifically because they were sort of in the same area of their career, especially Diggs. Like, he had already signed a really nice second contract with the Vikings that was a steal for the Bills for a while. DJ Moore is on a pretty nice deal for the Chicago Bears here because he's already signed a second contract, but AJ Brown also was going to need his second contract as well. I thought those two guys were elite top 5 wide receiver talents prior to getting traded, and then they had their big seasons in their new homes. I don't think DJ Moore is quite that guy. I think he's probably somewhere between, in terms of real life wide receivers, wide receiver 15 to 20, but he's a true number one receiver that can win in a variety of ways. And I don't need to tell you, I don't need to tell any listener out there that the Chicago Bears did not employ anybody like that last season, and really haven't employed anybody like that since Allen Robinson was like in his peak years in like 19 and 20 prior to Justin Fields getting there. So he can definitely have that same sort of transformative effect that Josh Allen received when Steph Diggs got there, that Jalen Hurts got with AJ Brown last year, even if it's just to a slightly diminished degree, because I don't think the rest of the Bears infrastructure and ecosystem will be quite like the Eagles had last year, nor do I think DJ Moore is that type of talent, albeit a very, very good true number one wide receiver.
And you could make an easy argument, honestly, that he is the best wide receiver among this class, that the Bears got their guy
easily,
even if they would have stuck at number one or number nine. And we'll get to all those players. You know, we'll both talk about them on our respective shows throughout the offseason, so we don't need to get to that just yet. But every single receiver coming out, Jaxon Smith-Njigba included, all have red flags, glaring holes that profile them as maybe wide receiver ones, but there's no locks like last year. So DJ Moore, in my opinion, just to, like you mentioned, have the next 3 years of his contract locked up with no more dead money left on the deal. I mean, it's a great deal, honestly, for Chicago, even off the field.
I'm really interested to see where he ends up falling in summer ADP, because he has been a darling of the fantasy industry for a long time, DJ Moore has. So I know folks like you and I probably will like pump him up and be really excited, just like I did last year, by the way, when freaking Baker Mayfield was his quarterback. Like,
to be fair, Moore did reach career high in touchdowns. He did get that, at least. It just it didn't really matter, because those windows when he had bad quarterback play did not help him out.
Yeah, at one point when he had like 40 yards or something against the Arizona Cardinals, was like, boom, that's a big DJ Moore game at this point early on with Baker Mayfield. So we don't quite know where Justin Fields is going to fall in terms of like how good he's going to be as an NFL quarterback. But if we're talking by the end of the year that, oh, Justin Fields is for sure the best quarterback that DJ Moore's ever played with, number one, he's not clearing a very high bar. But still, I think that would not be a surprising statement at all. So, but I know, again, a lot of folks out there, a lot of casual players, a lot of listeners to this show are going to be like, never again, never DJ Moore. I'm not drafting him again. So, again, I'm very curious to see where he falls in terms of summer ADP. Let's talk about the Panthers here. They get the first overall pick. Again, I like that they have a guy in Andy Dalton to potentially be, you know, a placeholder here, a two-year, $10 million deal. But they have the first overall pick. Who do you think they're moving up for? Do you buy the talk that they don't know yet who that guy might be?
I do not buy that talk. I believe it is CJ Stroud, who is my personal QB1 in this class as well. Leads all quarterbacks coming out. in completion rate, both over the intermediate level of the field, 10 to 19 yards, and deep, 20 yards downfield. You could make the argument, of course, and this is what NFL decision makers are trying to figure out, was that because of Stroud's talent, or was it because he's played with basically five first-round receivers throughout his career, including Marvin Harrison Jr., who is that dude compared to this class, and it's certainly going to explode atop rookie drafts next year. But overall, yes, I do believe they made it for Stroud. Having said that, with Stroud, we do have to question if he has the rushing prowess, like the legs, the athleticism to get inside the top 12, because we don't even need to look at his receiving options because they're bad in Carolina, right? Yeah, like everyone's trying to now squeeze in Terrace Marshall in the mid to late rounds. And I'm okay with that because he's the default number one receiver. But just like Justin Fields last year, what we really need to bank on is a rushing floor here. And we just don't know. I was at the combine in Indy, and I even heard some very important people, you know, at the bar late in the evening, very late into the evening, discuss like is Stroud's 6 for 66 that he showed in the playoffs, like was that him just trying to do too much, or is that something we should expect the next level? I think he personally has that kind of athleticism, but the fact he never showed it until like all the chips and all the cards were in the middle, that certainly is concerning. So that's the one thing I'm looking forward to finding out with Stroud, but I do believe he'll be the number one overall pick.
Hey, I was just doing a little Jaxon Smith-Njigba work here earlier today, putting my final game in for his reception perception sample, and I think it was the 2021 game either against Michigan or Oregon. Stroud rips a nice long touchdown right up the middle as a rusher. So I think he's got it within him. I think he talked about this to bring up Pat McAfee for the second time on the show. What a twist. He talked about this on McAfee's show that he did play with a little bit of an injury last year, but he's also said he needs to run more. So I like Stroud. I'm a big fan, and I think it would be great if he was the pick at number one. Like you mentioned, though, if the Panthers don't make a couple of big moves at the pass catching position, we're going to be having the same exact tweets we had with Justin Fields last year about CJ Stroud. Like, God, look at the guys he's throwing to, man. I mean, they might reunite Frank Reich with Paris Campbell. That's not doing it for me. You know, Terrace Marshall's not a guy who can get open on anything except slant and go routes. So I would hope that they follow a pretty similar path that we've seen, like the Bengals do. They take a quarterback number one overall. They come back at pick 39 because they still have a second rounder in the draft, and they potentially pair CJ Stroud with that guy. So pretty exciting stuff for both these teams. I think it's a good trade for both teams. I like it. I think there's a lot of potential fun paths that we can go down here. All right, now we're pretty much just going to go team by team here. Teams that are doing a lot here early on in the first 2 days of the legal tampering, legal negotiating window, whatever you want to call it, starting with the Chargers, who have granted permission to running back Austin Eckler. You might have heard of him if you listened to this podcast. They granted him permission today to seek a trade after the two sides failed to make progress on a new contract. His agent, Cameron Weiss, told that to ESPN. This means that both hosts of Eckler's Edge are on their way out of Los Angeles in the same offseason. So there you go, Daigle. That's the real story.
Eckler, also known for being Harmon and Pat Corain's best friend, yes, now trying to get out of LA after contract negotiations did not go well. Having said that, as much as I cheer exclusively for players, and Eckler is such a good dude, I want the absolute best for him. Unfortunately, now is not the time to test the market because look at the available running backs even. Like, we saw Rashad Penny just accept a one-year deal, and we have faith in him with Philadelphia. I'm sure we'll get to that in a bit. But honestly, like with Miles Sanders, David Montgomery, Jamal Williams, Alexander Mattison, that's just to name a few. Devin Singletary as well. Damian Harris still on the open market, not to mention Bijan coming in, Jahmyr Gibbs getting hyped in the draft as well. There are just so many names, and genuinely, what, 3-4 spots to add another player? That's it. And so it's just an oversaturated market right now. So I hope Eckler gets it. He certainly deserves it. But I don't know who would actually help him force his hand. Remember, the Giants dangled Saquon Barkley for a second-round pick. That's all they were asking for last offseason, and they didn't get a single offer because, like, everyone knows this running back market and how easily you can shore it up. So Eckler is a very special talent, but will he have his way? I genuinely just don't think it's the right time, honestly.
Yeah, it sucks because he's in the last year.
It does suck.
By the By the way, last time he and I talked, this was one of the first things out of his mouth. And I was like, well, what's going on with you this offseason? He's like, well, you know, contract and all that. 2023 is the last year of his deal. He's making $6.3 million on that deal. Like, you know, even relative to a depressed running back market, like these guys like Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, Tony Pollard, they're all making $10 million, which is still, you're kind of getting banged if that's mm-hmm. your contract. They're making $10 million on the franchise tag. Obviously, with Austin's production, he's got a problem with that. So I understand where he's coming from. And he's been so central to what they've done. It's kind of hard for me to imagine that he has more value to another team than he has to the Chargers. But we have seen this is how these things start from a trade perspective. And the Chargers just pushed a ton of money into future years with restructures for guys like, you know, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Khalil Mack, who, you know, due to injuries for the most part for the receivers, wasn't so great in 2022 for those guys, while Austin was kind of the linchpin of the offense. If I actually had to like bet this, I think he probably stays in LA. I just obviously hope it comes with at least some sort of slight pay raise for the guy, for God's sakes.
And we know he's too important to take off the field all the time, but I believe it was on this very show, he even mentioned that he wants to get off the, you know, 250 plus touches per year. And it's the first thing Kellen Moore said when he signed. He's like, we're using three or four running backs, including Josh Kelly. So if Eckler does return, I'll be interested to see the machination they use, especially after using it, you know, a day two pick on Isaiah Spiller last year, who does profile as a workhorse running back if he can figure it out.
I'll see if we can get him on for an emergency pod if he gets traded. Now that, yeah, there we go.
There's one person who has that excess, so you would be wise to use it.
All right, let's stay in the AFC West and move to the Raiders, who have been extremely busy, Daigle. I am interested to hear what you think about some of these offseason moves for them. Jimmy Garoppolo signs with the Raiders on a 3-year, $67 million deal. $34 million guaranteed. Who cares? This is kind of basically a potential one, potential 2-year deal. Gives him a lot of flexibility to still make other moves at the quarterback position, but we'll get to that in a second. They also signed Jacoby Myers to a 3-year deal, $33 million with $21 million guaranteed, and they signed Philip Dorsett to a 1-year deal. That's adorable. But let's stick with those two before we talk about the tight end that they traded. Jimmy Garoppolo reaction. I know people have a lot of takes about the Jimmy Garoppolo thing. And how is he really an upgrade on Derek Carr? Where do you stand on them bringing in Garoppolo and Jacoby Myers from New England?
You touched on the contract details as well, because we've seen with the market, what I do and what everyone should do, honestly, is just look for the first year a quarterback can be cut and save money against the cap. And that basically tells you how long his deal is, because he has 1 or 2 years most of the time to prove that he's worth keeping rather than saving money against the cap. And in this case for Garoppolo, it does look closer to a 1-year deal. Same for Geno Smith, whereas Daniel Jones and Derek Carr basically signed 2-year deals. But for Garoppolo, mm-hmm. it's interesting because like many of the signings we've seen for fantasy so far, they don't impact the player directly. Like, we're not even talking about, should we draft Garoppolo with the Raiders? We're all just curious, does he tank Davante Adams? Since Adams is the one currently going at number 10 overall in early best ball drafts. And I think the floor is at least safe. Now, it is concerning that Garoppolo, like Carr, struggled throwing deep last year. Top 20, actually, in back-to-back seasons with the 49ers, Garoppolo finished outside the top 20 and completion rate 20 yards downfield. But we also know that Adams was hammered a career-high 30% of his targets in the intermediate level of the field, 10 to 19 yards out. And that's where Jimmy G was great last year. 64% completion rate the past two seasons compared to Derek Carr's 52% completion rate in the intermediate level, which ranked 32nd last season. And so I do think Adams' floor is safe. It's just a matter of now, are we going to get these ceiling games? And since we removed Darren Waller from the equation, I think so. I don't really worry about Jacoby Myers so much, since he is a, albeit terrific, just a possession receiver. Yeah. We still want the ceiling, which Adams holds, and which I would argue Myers does not have anymore, since he's still surrounded by elite talent. Even Hunter Renfrow has been great when he's been healthy. I'm also expecting now to all of a sudden run more 11 personnel, 3 wide sets, given that they lost Waller, Foster Moreau's a free agent, and now have Myers under this contract, basically a one-year deal, getting $11 million annually next to Hunter Renfrow and Adams. And Garoppolo did quietly finish ninth in yards per attempt last year from 11 personnel. So a little bit of a boost there. So I think the floor is still safe, but like what they did in tearing down this offense, I was coming to you for that answer because I don't actually know what the game plan is here. I don't see the blueprint like playing out outside of just not understanding what they're doing, honestly.
I think the Garoppolo signing, number one, it's not like you can't really sit there and be like, all right, is he better or is he worse than Derek Carr? I mean, you can obviously have that conversation. That's what sports is about, is stupid little debates like that. What's objectively true, though, is they've got him cheaper than they would have had Derek Carr, and he's cheaper than what the Saints paid for Derek Carr. And I think Jimmy just leaves them with the flexibility to not be totally boned at the quarterback position this year. You know, they don't want to have to run out there and start, you know, some vagabond veteran. They don't want to be having like a Baker Mayfield, Carson Wentz quarterback competition after sending Derek Carr to the curb.
They don't want to be the Bucks, basically.
Right. That would be a disaster for this organization and this brain trust that basically decided to move on from Derek Carr, which I think was a defensible decision. I also think that this still, again, as you point out the contract, they can get out of this thing in a year. They can still draft a quarterback. And by the way, after Darren Waller's trade, and we can talk about that here in just a second, the Raiders have 12 picks in the draft this year. Like, they can still certainly move up the draft board for an Anthony Richardson or a Will Levis, one of these guys that people say, hey, you want to let this guy marinate on the bench for a little bit. You don't want to play him in year one. That gives them perfect flexibility to do that. And I think Jakobi Meyers, like, he's not a slot only player. I think he gets labeled as a slot only player, but he can beat man coverage at a good enough rate to play as your flanker outside. And that leaves them then. Davante Adams is the X receiver. We know he's one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver in the NFL. I love your point about the intermediate routes there that he was so good on this year with Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. You know, Jimmy's not gonna throw an out route, but he can certainly throw you a pretty nice dig route. That also lines up with Myers' skill set. And then I think that leaves them with Hunter Renfrow as their slot receiver. I would expect the target pecking order to probably go Adams, Myers, and Renfrow. And again, as you said, 11 personnel to be their base sort of way to attack. And we know the deal with Jimmy, man. Like, he's not a bad quarterback. He can be a good quarterback when he's surrounded by good talent. And I do think, even after trading Darren Waller with Josh Jacobs in the backfield, these three receivers, that's a pretty good setup for Jimmy.
We've seen Hunter Renfrow also have spike weeks without Darren Waller in the lineup. So there is certainly some hope here. The real question just comes down to, can Davante Adams sustain as a first-round player with Jimmy G? And I still believe so. Like, you may get some eggs some weeks, but I think the ceiling is still certainly there with this build of an offense.
And Jimmy played his best ball last year, and not even like in the cookie cutter, boot play action Shanahan style away. They were having, like, when all those guys were healthy out there, they were having Jimmy like drop back and play like big boy quarterback, and he was actually responding pretty well. So I kind of have like an inkling of hope that he could be. I've never been like the biggest Jimmy Garoppolo fan or anything, but I actually think like he's not just going to be totally helpless without Kyle Shanahan. And obviously there's familiarity here with Josh McDaniels from the New England days. Let's move to Darren Waller though. Yeah, go ahead.
And if we're citing Garoppolo being poor throwing deep, you also have to note that Derek Carr finished 29th on completion rate on deep throws. Yeah. So like a worst case scenario is that it's a wash, whereas it's most likely a slight upgrade, which sounds great.
I think it's really most likely this is just going to be a wash. If he can get to all of Jimmy Garoppolo, I think can get to like all of Derek Carr's raw stats, at least last year. He's probably not going to be the same efficiency monster that he was in San Francisco. But again, this is still a pretty good setup here. And the bottom line is, like you said, all we care about is how are these guys going to, elevate each other for fantasy. And that I think this is the best case scenario for the Raiders after moving on from Derek Carr. Realistic scenario.
He'll be somewhere between Derek Carr and Jared Stidham against the Chiefs. Against the 49ers. Somewhere in that range.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a hell of a range right there. Darren Waller, as we mentioned, was traded. I saw Tashawn Reed, who covers the Raiders for The Athletic, potentially talk about Hunter Renfrow as a trade candidate. His $6.5 million salary and $4.3 million bonus won't become guaranteed until Friday. I feel like that's less likely after Waller gets moved. He's traded to the New York Giants for the Kadarius Toney pick, the 100th overall pick in this year's draft. Daigle, my big thing on this show has been, the cancel culture mob is coming for the tight end position. I don't know where you stand on this issue, but people want to get rid of tight ends. They want to throw them out. Really, the slogan here is we just need to restore the tight end middle class. We know there's Travis Kelce. We know there's all the guys down there. You know, the sleepers that everybody's going to talk themselves into in the offseason that never really hit. We just need to get the middle class here. I feel like this move for Darren Waller could potentially help us restore the middle class here at tight end as he moves to the New York Giants and immediately becomes their best pass catcher.
After Kelce averages literally 4 more points per game, the next closest tight end last year. Yes, we are just asking, do you run routes? Can you score touchdowns? That's all I want from the middle class of tight ends. And Darren Waller fits that mold. I don't know what happened last year, to be completely honest with you. I think it was a failing of Derek Carr. And forgotten in the shuffle, I think John Gruden was just a really good offensive coach that elevated Derek Carr, honestly. Yep. And so Waller, we saw him have a 16% target share in his full games last year when he was healthy, and he was rarely healthy. But that doesn't fit the mold, because remember, his last 3 years of the Raiders prior to that under Gruden, he averaged a 25% target share. So we think even at 31, there are still these spike weeks, not to mention that Dable, we saw time and time again, cater the offense and that week's blueprint to the defense. And so there will absolutely be weeks where they just feed Waller. That's why I don't even really look at, you know, Dable's history of targeting his tight ends or whatever. Yeah. And yes, he was a former Patriots tight ends coach. Yes, he worked with Rob Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett. He's very aware of super athlete tight ends like a Waller and what he can do with them. But it really just comes down to, I will put the best players in position to make the best plays. And Waller is certainly one of those players, as long as he's healthy. But of course, given how poor, you mentioned it already, how poor the landscape is, we're just trying to naturally elevate players who can provide spike weeks. I think Waller fits that mold, honestly, with the Giants.
Totally. And you're so right to point out that things felt weird with Waller from the jump this year. And I also, by the way, don't think that like ownership is on the same page with the coaching staff on some of these things, because like they gave Darren Waller an extension last offseason. They gave Hunter Renfrow an extension last offseason. These two guys that were like Raiders favorites in previous years. And then, you know, Darren Waller, things were clearly frosty with Josh McDaniels. McDaniels broke the news at the combine that Darren Waller was getting married, and Darren Waller had not announced that yet. So he was pissed. They were pissed at each other about that. There was things prior to that. You know, Darren Waller struggled with injuries. We should obviously mention that. And Hunter Renfrow, I mean, McDaniels had damn Mac Hollins playing in two receiver sets over Hunter Renfrow. And I get it, Renfro's a slot guy, but Mac Hollins is like a special teamer, man. What are we doing here? So I think there's obviously some weirdness going on that you could maybe write off for Darren Waller. The injuries are a real concern. I do think the Giants are not done at wide receiver. I think they will make other moves. They're probably still trying to find some potential trade targets as well. They could easily take someone in the first round. You know, Jaxon Smith-Njigba would be awesome in this offense. But right now, I think Waller, again, he would probably be the favorite to lead the team in targets if the season started right now. Again, I think they will potentially make some other moves here. But for now, really good projection for Waller in New York.
It's been my worst fear for Saquon Barkley, too. The moment early best ball drafts opened, I was ignoring Barkley in that first second round ADP, because there's just no way he can repeat leading the team in targets again. Like team high in targets, the fourth highest share of team targets among all running backs in the league. And Dable and Joe Shane, from the very beginning, they mentioned at the combine 3 to 5 times when they were asked, their priority this offseason is wide receivers. And adding Darren Waller on that contract at his age was basically the best wide receiver on the market, honestly. Mm-hmm. And so not only that, but they're not done. Like they're getting help beyond Isaiah Hodgins. So I just think they continue adding, and that obviously takes away from Barkley's target share this year.
Yeah, I think he's going to be an interesting guy to talk about in the early parts of the draft. All right, let's move on to the Texans here. They made some signings. Who doesn't want to talk about the Houston Texans?
You are correct.
First of all, before we talk about their important moves, Nick Caserio, shout out to the guy for just sticking to a bit here, man. On like the first couple days that you can negotiate with players, he makes these signings like Noah Brown, Andrew Beck, Chase Winovich, Hassan Ridgeway. I mean, that's just classic Caserio stuff. But I do find these other four moves that they made at least moderately interesting, especially the first one here. Robert Woods goes to the Texans on a 2-year, $15.3 million deal with $10 million guaranteed. They also bring in Case Keenum, potentially be a bridge quarterback. They bring in Jimmy Ward from San Francisco, and they traded for Shaq Mason. He might start on the offensive line, and basically a pick swap with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are in salary cap trouble. Robert Woods, though, again, great blocker. I know my mentions don't want to hear about me talk about wide receiver blocking, but he is a good blocker. You think they're going to install like a Shanahan-style system here, obviously, with Bobby Slowick as the offensive coordinator. My problem, though, with Woods, Daigle, is that I think he was a declining player from an individual basis in 2021 prior to the ACL tear. And then, obviously, last year, disaster in Tennessee. So I think it's a nice signing for them to put somebody in the room, but I'm not that excited about this here, regardless of who they draft at quarterback.
And he proved he was declining at last year's stint with the Titans, just simply finishing with his lowest target per route run rate since his rookie year. And to your point, that was my first note as well in the free agent tracker was that, hey, at least Robert Woods was top 12 in Pro Football Focus's run blocking grades. That's what he does well this stage of his career.
There's good stock up for Damian Pierce.
but you can't even make the argument that the team is going to trade Brandon Cooks, because they will. There's no doubt in my mind they're getting rid of him. But you can't make the argument that Woods will suddenly lead the team in targets because of that, because the runway was wide open last year. Like, Treylon Burks suffered numerous injuries out the gates. And Woods, with Kyle Phillips also getting injured and unable to establish himself in the slot, had this all to himself. And yet he still couldn't lead the team in targets. So I just don't think the opportunity matters at this stage of his career. A much better player on the field than in fantasy.
Yeah, for sure. And it's about putting together a non-embarrassing cast of players around, you know, potentially Bryce Young at the second overall pick. And
you talk about CJ Stroud, though, and his surrounding cast with Terrace Marshall, Viska Chenault, the list goes on. Like, who is, assuming it's Bryce Young, just given the ties from Cesario to Alabama and Nick Saban being his friend, like, who would Bryce Young even throw to if he was the number two overall pick, assuming he is? They did shore up their offensive line a little more. It sounds like they're slowly working out Laramie Tunsil's contract, which would be amazing since like the forgotten second best left tackle in the entire league behind Trent Williams, since he plays in Houston, traded for Shaq Mason as well. So they're establishing something stout, at least for Damian Pierce. But right now, if Bryce Young looks up, I genuinely don't know who his number one receiver is next year.
I still like Nico Collins as a potential X receiver. I think he's probably a guy, you know, things just never really kind of got rolling with him last year because he suffered, I think it was a groin injury at different parts of the year. And eventually, like, you know, when Cooks was out, he ended up going out of the lineup as well. So, again, Nico Collins, like Robert Woods, you can sort of squint at a starting wide receiver duo there, but it's certainly among the worst groups in the league.
Like how our friend Ian Harditz always goes back to Duke Johnson's rushing yards at Miami arbitrarily, I will always go back to Nico Collins having offers from Alabama and Georgia. I'll just be like, Alabama offered him a deal. Like, they wanted to bring him on. That has to mean something.
And speaking of Alabama, too, they do have last year's second round pick, theoretically, John Mechie, coming back after missing his entire rookie year battling leukemia. There should at least be some connective tissue there. Again, that's all in theory. Who knows?
Who also profiled as a good run blocker coming out of college, too.
Dude, they're going to run the hell out of the ball there.
Let's get Damian Pierce in those lineups.
I think that's what we figured out here. Speaking of a team, I think that wants to run the hell out of the ball. My big takeaway from the Denver Broncos early spending spree here in free agency is they want to run the hell out of the ball. Russ Cook stuff is officially dead. I think Sean Payton, you know, people forget, Daigle, that Sean Payton really built a lot of great rushing attacks in New Orleans and really built through the offensive line. They had great offensive lines down in New Orleans. I think it gets lost in the fact that Drew Brees, you know, was just putting up these crazy passing numbers, but those were definitely two truisms from the Sean Payton era in New Orleans. They signed Mike McGlinchey to a massive, massive five-year deal here. They also bring in Ben Powers. I kind of sneaky like that move a little better on a four-year, $52 million deal. He was a big-time pulling guard for the Ravens. Again, should be a big run blocker. The kicker here for me is they signed Chris Manhertz, 2 years, $60 million, or $6 million. Chris Manhertz is only a blocking tight end. So those three moves in conjunction there totally say to me, like, yeah, this is going to be the early identity for the Denver Broncos under Sean Payton, is they're going to try to fix this run game and take the ball out of Russ's hands a little bit.
You misspoke. $60 million is what Josh Oliver nearly made. Not Chris
We'll get to that.
But yeah, to your point, Peyton clearly building like he did in New Orleans from the inside out. In ESPN's run block win rate metric, Mike McGlinchey finished 5th among all tackles last year. Ben Powers finished 2nd among all guards in that metric last year. And Manhertz finished 19th among all tight ends. Just trying to look for a great blocking core of players. And sneakily, like Kyle Shanahan, Sean Payton was always really good at masking the inefficiencies and pass protection of his offensive linemen. So like you look at McGlinchey, knowing he allowed 36 pressure, 6 sacks last year. And I almost honestly don't even worry about it because Payton historically just masked those errors from his players. So a good start, in my opinion. And also, you know, all we do is talk about, I guess, run blocking and dogs on this show. And there's no other dog than Samaje Perine. Like, that's the guy who genuinely brings physicality everywhere he goes, anytime he's on the field. Made 2 spot starts for Joe Mixon last year, averaged 24 touches in those starts. And honestly, this is the year, Javonte Williams, that he has his J.K. Dobbins seasons. That he has the year where he's overdrafted, is likely, in my opinion, healthy scratched in week 1 and is just brought along super slowly. So I've been practically avoiding him everywhere, believing he's severely overdrafted. And it's going to be more of a Perine year, honestly, because he's the kind of guy who can handle that kind of workload.
I actually thought they might aim a little higher. And no disrespect to Samaje Perine, who, as you mentioned, is a dog. Mm-hmm. But I kind of thought they might, again, aim in that like Kareem Hunt tier or something like that. But I love this move because Perine showed he was super reliable last year. I also kind of think that he got kicked to the curb a little early after like kind of a whatever stint in Washington. He's just been a really, really good player for the Cincinnati Bengals behind Joe Mixon. You know, even at different points last year looked better than Joe Mixon. I'm really going to be interested in Samaje Perine on these, like, you know, if you're going to punt running back early in your drafts, like taking him because he might have the full workload potentially in the first couple of weeks there. Love that signing. And again, it seems like a pretty clear signal to me that they want to run the hell out of the ball. They're reportedly open for business for trading away Jerry Jeudy or Courtland Sutton. I don't know that I would really be trying to buy high on either one of those guys if I was an NFL team, but if forced to pick, I would definitely prefer Jeudy over Sutton at this point.
And we've seen both the past 2 years have immense success without the other on the field. And so what I've been doing is just drafting both, thinking that one of them gets moved. And so like you can capitalize on both players if you think one of them gets moved, since they'll be playing elsewhere most likely.
That's not a bad idea. I just think Jerry Judy's a better player. Like, and I'm not even like that high on Jerry Jeudy either. I just am kind of been down on Sutton for the last few years.
I think I'm lukewarm. I just still don't know. Like, what, we're 2-3 years into Judy's career and I still don't know what he is.
I think if you throw out, and I hear what you're saying on that, I think if you throw out like the idea of Jerry Jeudy and what he was coming into the NFL is like, oh, he's this great route runner, great technician. And you just kind of view him as what he's really been in the NFL, which is like an inconsistent, splashy, like big play threat. I kind of think he makes sense in that way. So I view him as sort of like a slightly like a diminished version of like what Amari Cooper is, who's been a frustrating like boom bust player throughout the course of his career. I kind of think Jerry Jeudy is that guy as well. A little bit definitely overrated as a route runner. But again, I think I prefer him a little bit more to Sutton, who just I just never want to have like my number one receiver be a guy who can't get open. And Sutton pretty much is, you know, especially post ACL, never been a guy who could get open.
And honestly, Sutton, though, a lot of the issues come to quarterback play as well, since he basically lost 2 years from Drew Lock on deep balls and then backup quarterbacks and Russell Wilson, who was terrible on deep balls last year. Well, until they fired Nathaniel Hackett in the last month of the season. So, yeah, it's just hard to gauge those kind of players. It's not a situation like Terry McLaurin, for example, who we know is one of the absolute best route runners in the league. He just has yet, and it's amazing every time I say it, even though I know it, he has yet to finish top 20 in fantasy points per game in any season among wide receivers, because not for his flaws, but because of the quarterbacks he's played with.
Yeah, I have that etched into the wall here with some like tear marks in the office. So believe
that's
me.
That's your Brooks was here. You just carved it into the wall.
Exactly.
It's McLaurin runs routes.
Oh man, what a sad state of affairs. Speaking of the Broncos quarterback, they do sign Jarrett Stidham to a backup deal, so not a big deal there. Let's move on to the 49ers. they signed Javon Hargrave to a 4-year, $80 million deal. I can't believe they pulled that off. That's going to be exciting for their defense. They also bring back center Jake Brendel on a 4-year deal. But the biggest note here, Daigle, this is how you know it's not been a great opening free agency period for fantasy. What I'm saying, the big deal here for the frickin' 49ers is that they bring Sam Darnold in on a 1-year deal, $4.5 million deal. You know, a bunch of potential up twos, guarantees, whatever. Sam Darnold, probably like a non-0% chance he starts games for this team this year, which is crazy to say.
Of course, since Trey Lance is reportedly going to be ready for OTAs in May, but coming off ankle surgery, we don't just know yet. And then Brock Purdy, who knows if he'll play a single down. Who knows if he'll play again, honestly. And it sucks because they probably don't win, but I do want to see that version of Purdy versus that Eagles team again. Again, the 49ers probably don't win, but I think that was shaping up to be a really fun game. Now, Purdy, of course, was going to regress at some point. He was carrying a touchdown rate higher than MVP Patrick Mahomes is into that game. And so even though on field Purdy was making some amazing plays, like he wasn't going to keep having a 9%+ touchdown rate throughout the year, but proved to be a fun backup, assuming he comes back healthy at some point. So yeah, we're going to truly see maybe if Shanahan turns any quarterback, Sam Darnold included, into a, you know, career backup. For the most part though, the 49ers really haven't touched much because they don't have to. Like you mentioned, Javon Hargrave, I still don't know how they fit that contract into their books, but it's no secret like that he shined with the Eagles and they only allowed him to walk because the money, of course, because they run a rotation of front seven players. Next Gen Stats actually charted Hargrave with a 14.1% pressure rate individually over the last 2 years. And no other defensive tackle has generated even a 12% clip in that time. Like, he's an absolute monster up the middle. And now he's playing right next to Eric Armstead. I don't know how the NFL allowed this to happen. So I think that's still the biggest takeaway, honestly, for the Niners this year.
Yeah, definitely. If we see Sam Darnold play a bunch of games, it will be definitely a test of, like, how good is Kyle Shanahan's rehab program? That's for sure. I still have...
Because when Darnold was good last year, remember, it was only because Carolina was hiding him. Like, he was averaging 23 pass attempts per game. They just weren't letting him throw the ball.
What team can hide a quarterback better than the San Francisco 49ers, though? So, yeah.
That's very true.
There could definitely be some, like, Sam Darnold freaks letting their flag fly this offseason or this season on Twitter if he actually takes some snaps for this team. Let's move on to the Falcons. Again, dogs, blockers. A team that wants to run the hell out of the ball. They retain both of their big-time linemen, Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry. A big, fat $105 million deal for Lindstrom, and McGarry gets a 3-year, $34.5 million deal. They also make moves on defense. They bring in Jesse Bates on a big deal, David Onyemata on a pretty decent-sized deal there. On offense, though, Daigle, in addition to the linemen, they make two additions that I like a lot here. Number one, they signed ODU's finest, Taylor Heinicke. It's top-end backup money they gave him. I think this is an indication that they probably are just going to roll with Desmond Ridder this year. Maybe you disagree. I don't know. That's kind of the way it's going for me. They also trade a seventh-round pick for Jonnu Smith in a distressed asset type of trade here. Daigle, your reaction to Jonnu Smith getting reunited with Arthur Smith and the panic that went down with, you know, what does this mean for Kyle Pitts? My take is it probably means nothing. For Kyle Pitts.
The good news, though, is that Kyle Pitts is at least available in the sixth round this year, if you believe it means nothing.
That is nice.
As opposed to last year when I had to just throw away my analysis and say, I guess I need some Kyle Pitts given his profile, and I'll draft him in the second round. So at least there's that.
Oh, second round.
I'm still concerned about the overall scheme. Like, I still don't think they're going to go in with, you know, third round Desmond Ridder as their starting quarterback. But so far, everything they've shown with their moves, the money kind of spells it, that that's what they're looking at. Now, maybe they change it up with the number 8 overall pick. I've actually heard some Bijan rumors with the number 8 pick as well. So we'll see what happens
there. That.
Yeah, because they still want to be a run first offense. Like, we laughed earlier about the Bears averaging, you know, a prehistoric 22 pass attempts per game. The Falcons averaged 24.4 last year. Like, they were right there as well as a historically low passing offense. And I don't expect that to change given their move so far, especially to lock in their stud offensive linemen. So, yeah, Pitts in sixth round. Sure. Why not? That's where I'm at this point in life, is just why not? And genuinely just waiting out the rest of their moves.
I feel the same way, like kind of just waiting to see. I would just say about Jonnu Smith, I think if you want Kyle Pitts to be split out as like a receiver more often and not have him as a true tight end, this at least gives them like a viable option to throw out there on the field in two tight end sets to maybe move Pitts around a little bit more. I think that can potentially be good for him. And just on Heinicke, again, we probably don't ever see him take a snap for this team in an ideal scenario, but ODU's finest is a survivor, man. He finds a way to get on the field. And when he does, you will definitely not feel the same way about Marcus Mariota as with Taylor Heinicke here, because Mariota just could not get the ball. Even when they designed up great looks for Kyle Pitts, and you see him like running wide open down the field on film. Same with Drake London, too. Mariota's not pushing that ball. Heinicke, God bless him, will just throw the piss out of the ball to his good players. You know, devil be damned there. He will do that, it.
That's what worries me about Desmond Ridder to Kyle Pitts, too, because, you know, everyone always cited Kyle Pitts's, I call them prayer yards, because they are never going to come to fruition.
Yes, they weren't
air yards because they were never going to be conceived. They're always prayer yards. They didn't matter whatsoever because they were off target. The issue is that in Desmond Ridder starts, his on target rate on throws 10 yards downfield was slightly lower than Marcus Mariota. So it didn't get any better. And so that's my one concern here with Pitts.
Yeah, I still find it tough to believe that they just run in here with Desmond Ridder, but it's looking that way so far. But we got a long
way. It's only March, but it is looking that way. Yeah.
Dolphins, obviously the big thing for the Dolphins is they make a trade for Jalen Ramsey. They have to give up a third round pick and tight end Hunter Long. I'm curious where you'll be putting Hunter Long in your tight end rankings after this big move by the LA Rams to get him. But really what that just says to me, Daigle, is that the Dolphins view this as like, okay, we got a window here. Like, we can potentially make a run, even though the AFC is stacked. Let's go get Jalen Ramsey. Get him in Vic Fangio's system, see what he can do there. And then otherwise they make just little minor moves on offense. They bring back both Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson. And I think it was pretty crucial for them to get quarterback insurance in Mike White on a 2-year deal. You know, this way that if Tua goes down, there's a guy in Mike White who's familiar with this coaching tree after playing with Mike LaFleur with the New York Jets. If Tua misses games, their quarterback play shouldn't be outright embarrassing like it was at certain times last year.
300-yard performances and 7 career starts with LaFleur as well. So at least he can step in and know the offense. And again, Mike McDaniel's scheme doesn't ask you to do too much. Like, you complete passes underneath and you allow receivers, and they only use 2 receivers. Like, that's it. Like, Jalen Waddle had a 21% target share. The next closest was a Trent Sherfield with a 10% target share. Like, they just canceled out everyone else except Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. And they just ask you to get underneath. I remember Waddle in the preseason came out and he mentioned the very first thing McDaniel taught him when he arrived was to swing your hips upfield the moment you catch the ball, because Waddle would use his momentum and it would carry him out of bounds. And they're like, no, the entire point of this scheme is to get as many yards as you can on these quick dump offs. So literally when you catch the ball, I need you to throw your hips upfield and try to use your momentum to swing you that way to gain every yard possible. And I think it's something we saw even when you watch that Bills game around Christmas time in the snow on that 80-yard touchdown he had. Like, he used that technique then. And so yeah. Mike White can do that. Mike White is a dump-off specialist capable of having big games. So, you know, even in these early best ball drafts where you naturally draft 3 QBs because we don't have the schedule, so all you're doing is like going by the fundamentals and padding yourself just in case your quarterback stack bye weeks. Like, I've even just stacked Tua and Mike White together thinking that, yeah, it's very possible White makes starts here given Tua's 3 concussions last year.
Absolutely. And again, I think he's a guy that can run this offense, and that's a really nice signing. They were the one spot, I think, when you look around the entire league, Daigle, where it's like, okay, if they draft a running back, and I know they don't have a first round pick, but like, if they drafted a running back, that guy could potentially take over like feature back duties immediately. Or if they made a big swing in free agency, like a Miles Sanders type.
They did. But they did reportedly call about Dalvin Cook, since I honestly thought the Vikings were genuinely going to cut Cook to help get under the cap, since he could save them nearly 8 million if he was shed right now. But yeah, the Dolphins did call. They just reportedly couldn't make a deal work and then went and re-signed both backs, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I think that they're probably comfortable with these two guys, but I still think that doesn't necessarily preclude them from drafting somebody in April's draft. And that player would, I think, like, the way for Miami to kind of get a counterpunch to their great passing game is to really beef up the run game. And I think there will still be work to be done on that regard there. New Orleans Saints, they bring three guys back here since we've obviously last spoken about Derek Carr. Michael Thomas re-signed on a one-year, $10 million deal. Jameis Winston, that was surprising, he's back on a one-year deal as well. And Juwan Johnson is back for 2 years, $12 million deal. Reaction to these three guys back with New Orleans this year?
And Derek Carr and joining them, we talked about quarterback contracts earlier. I mentioned two-year deal because in 2025, that's when they can save $28.6 million against the cap by cutting him. He's 32 years old. He got benched last year. So I am worried about him now, like, carrying over an offense that I don't even blame Andy Dalton for. Honestly, being Andy Dalton, I thought he gave them everything he had. I worry about coaching there more than anything. But what we do know historically is that Carr hasn't finished top 20 in fantasy points per game among quarterbacks since he underwent that serious fibula surgery in 2017. Last year, we already mentioned as well how poor he was on throws downfield. So although I don't worry about Chris Olave, since that's the real question here, right? Michael Thomas, it's not even about the quarterback play. It really just comes down to him being healthy and ironing out the off-field issues that have limited him in the past. But overall, I'm still very high, top 15 receiver on Chris Olave. But individually for Derek Carr, I don't know what else he can sustain, honestly. Even Juwan Johnson, after he turned 9 red zone receptions into 6 touchdowns, like, it's hard to argue that will carry over either outside of just being a sporadic weekly ceiling. So yeah, it's just hard to argue anyone outside of Olave, in my opinion.
I do think Thomas can fill a nice real life and maybe slightly fantasy relevant role for this team, just because he is so different stylistically at this point in his career from a Chris Olave and even Rashid Shaheed, who I like a lot. He's a bigger body guy. Thomas did not look the same from a separation perspective in the first three games last year, but he was still really good on contested catches, 50-50 balls. We know he was really good in the red zone when he was playing there with Jameis earlier in the season. Still got open on some short routes as well. I actually think, like, a potential full-time move to the slot might be good for Michael Thomas. But yeah, pretty much all speculation there. And really the thing here is just Chris Olave. It's wheels up for him. Let's move to the Vikings. Make a couple moves. Bring in Marcus Davenport. That's an interesting one. Pass rusher from the New Orleans Saints. Garrett Bradbury, they bring back on a 3-year deal. You mentioned it earlier, buddy. Josh Oliver, 3 years, $21 million with almost $11 million in guaranteed. And he's just, like, pretty much a pure blocker. I guess this theoretically could have, you know, TJ Hockenson running more full-time slot receiver for them next year if Josh Oliver is going to be their, like, legit, you know, Y tight end.
And Hockenson will basically just be deployed like Travis Kelce, as he was last year.
Yeah.
He led all tight ends and routes run after the trade deadline when he joined Minnesota. It is an odd contract. Like, there wasn't much to yell about, honestly. I think, though, the Josh Oliver deal, given his history, is probably the most egregious contract, because it also came into nowhere. It's like, why did this just enter my timeline? Why did this have to happen?
Who do you think was bidding against the Vikings for Josh Oliver and, like, you know, $10.8 million guaranteed?
Especially because we've heard literally nothing about Mike Gesicki and Dalton Schultz. Nothing at all. And yet here's Josh Oliver on the first day of tampering allowed, getting $21 million. Absolutely insane. But no, Hockenson, I knew what was going to happen from the very start. Like, I knew he was going to get steamed up given his high floor with the Vikings down the stretch. But honestly, he only really had one game you were scared of. Like, he ended you versus the Giants, 109 yards, 2 touchdowns. Beyond that, though, didn't reach 80 yards in any other game with the Vikings. So I do think, as the tight end 3 in drafts right now, he's pretty overblown. You don't want to get sucked up into that tight end dead zone, in my opinion. It's either Travis Kelce or then wait and stack your 3 or 4 tight ends down the later rounds of the draft. And so that's where I stand with the Vikings right now. Garrett Bradbury, as you talked about, really just got paid for recency bias because, you know, he's not even a great pass blocker, allowed the third most pressures among all centers last year. But remember, the last 2 months of the season when he was injured, like, their offensive line fell apart completely because even league average play, like, was enough to hold the team sturdy. And so, like, because they played so bad without him to close the year, he then got, like, this $15 million contract or whatever it was. So good for him, at least. He got paid.
I just want to know what Josh Oliver's reaction was when his agent told him that he got this contract offer. Because, by the way, for people out there, that's how it works. Like, we talked about Eckler's agent is the one leaking, like, oh, yeah, we're getting it. Like, we're looking for a trade request. You know, they gave us permission. Like, that's how it mostly goes, team agent, and then the agent goes and tells the player what's up. I want to know, like, what Josh Oliver's agent said to him and what Oliver's reaction was. Like, hey, Josh, buddy, you're never going to believe this. This is really me. This is your real agent. We got this deal from the Vikings. What do you think? You think we should take it? I don't know.
And did Josh Oliver's agent put in some kind of canceling chip into Chris Manhertz's agent's phone since Oliver signed before Manhertz? Like, if they were going to do that, why didn't you get the $6 million or the $3 million annually blocking tight end, not the $7 million annually blocking tight end? I just don't get it.
Well, you can just lock in like a Josh Oliver for 150 yards and like seven touchdowns on the season now that we've just had this conversation. Like, randomly, he's going to have these big moments.
And you can lock in this podcast for having the most blocking notes of any, if any football podcast throughout March, at least.
I mean, this is what the market has given us, Daigle. So thank you for coming on for the blocking show. The Super Bowl champs, speaking of more blocking notes, the Chiefs signed Jawan Taylor, 4-year deal, $80 million, $60 million guaranteed. Sounds like he might be moving to left tackle. He's been a career right tackle. And this means that the Chiefs will move on from Orlando Brown, who, by the way, played some right tackle for the Baltimore Ravens, were moving to left tackle, and then became a full-time left tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. So it's a risky move, but stylistically, Taylor's, again, blocking notes, baby. He's a better pass blocker than Orlando Brown is, who's more of a like a road grader type. And honestly, Daigle, if any team's going to pull this off and deserves a benefit of the doubt, it probably is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Allowed the third lowest pressure rate among all tackles, Taylor did, in the league last year. And the only other note for the Chiefs, honestly, is this yet again continued spin as Kadarius Toney is their wide receiver one.
Oh, please.
I don't know why beat reporters keep feeding that notion. I would love it, like everyone else. I think Toney deserves that opportunity. But remember those 2 weeks before the Super Bowl when the drum beat just got louder and louder until kickoff, and then Toney played 5 snaps. He scored a touchdown, but he played 5 freaking snaps in the Super Bowl. Like, I don't know why all of a sudden who is getting paid to tout Toney as the wide receiver one, because that's all the news has been so far.
I mean, something's got to keep Josh Norris going after, the mock draft championship a couple years ago. This is pretty much all he's got, man. I know he's got a wedding coming up. Shout out to Josh. Obviously, he's crushing it over there at Underdog. But this is really what's sustaining Josh at this point, is the every now and again, this is the week, this is the moment for Kadarius Toney, who still can't run anything more than a couple of Mickey Mouse routes, by the way.
I agree with you, although those Mickey Mouse routes are sexy.
They are great. They are extremely
fun. He's pretty good at what he does, but it's like Sky Moore running those Mickey Mouse routes as well. Like, and the Super Bowl just looked better because the Chiefs had that turf the grass in their favor, because Moore and Toney knew their routes, obviously, whereas the DBs didn't. So of course they couldn't keep up because they had to plant their feet on that grass. Like, that was all Bienemy, by the way. It wasn't Toney or Sky Moore. It was Bienemy understanding the context of the situation.
Yeah, and obviously that was done to some great results there. We'll see what happens. I do think that just like from the fantasy takeaway here, the Chiefs, I think, are going to continue to just build through the offensive line and trust Patrick Mahomes to like elevate whatever they throw out there at wide receiver. Whether they bring Juju back, whether they keep MBS around, obviously Toney and Moore could be in for bigger roles next year. Again, it's just all going to be about Mahomes, the offensive line, and I think this free agency moves shows that there. The Philadelphia Eagles, the other team that played in the Super Bowl, James Bradberry ends up re-signing with the team. That was kind of their one big coup on defense. As you mentioned, they've lost a lot of other guys there across the defense. You know, people are trying to figure out a CJ Gardner-Johnson. You know, he's making some new follows on Instagram. Is that a clue? For our purposes here, although I know you, I saw you tweet about the Eagles defense and how this is going to be big for their fantasy projections, but on a more like offensive note, Jason Kelce decides he's going to come back. He returns on a 1-year deal, and baby, Rashad Penny agrees to terms with the Philadelphia Eagles. I can't wait. I can't wait for the offseason of Rashad Penny, Daigle, and I'm being so, so serious when I say that. Miles Sanders is out the door. Boston Scott re-signed. Rashad Penny, we know the deal. Can't stay healthy. We get that. But, man, this is a hell of a situation for Rashad Penny.
I'm trying to temper my expectations, understanding that even in bringing Boston Scott back on that one-year deal, that likely they're going to add another impact player to their backfield. I don't think they're going to go in just with these three guys and Scott, Penny, and Kenneth Gainwell. At the same time, though, it's hard because I was eyeing Penny in free agency this entire time, waiting for his landing spot, understanding that it just comes down to health, as you mentioned it. Not only led all running backs in yards after contact per attempt last year, but over the last two seasons, Penny is second only behind Nick Chubb in rate of runs 10-plus yards as well. Just an explosive player. Over his last nine full games, five top 10 finishes, and has averaged 15.5 carries for 107 yards. 6.8 yards per carry, by the way, in that span. So it genuinely just comes down to health. He was, prior to being signed, going in the 14th round of best ball drafts. I believe most recent update in the last couple hours, I've seen him go like in the 7th or 8th round. So it's already arguably too rich for my blood, as long as I think they're going to add the Eagles another player. But it's genuinely hard not to get excited about his ceiling because you know he's going to pop for a couple games this year. The dude is going to explode.
I think the simplest analysis for Rashad Penny is he's going to be here for a good time, but he ain't going to be here for a long time. And that's probably like, but that good time, man, it's going to be good in this Eagles offense because Kelsey's back. The offensive line rocks. Miles Sanders, I know everybody freaks out about Jalen Hurts as a goal line threat. He had like 26 carries inside the 10-yard line last year. He was a big red zone threat himself. Penny is right now, as the roster stands, and I agree with you, they are most likely going to add yet another player in the draft. I don't think it's going to be, you know, a first round pick or anything like that, but it could easily be a third rounder or, you know, a fourth round or something like that. Just mix things up here a little bit. But right now, Penny's got a clear runway to that early down banger role. And we saw, like, Miles Sanders, by the way, was going in like the 7th, 8th round by the end of the summer at different points of the summer last year. And obviously he crushed it in it was a great return on that investment. He doesn't come with quite the same amount of questions that Penny does here. But yeah, again, I think Rashad Penny, he's going to be here for a good time. Just ain't going to be here for a long time.
And we will go back to Jalen Hurts as well. QB1 in points per game last year, despite getting injured. And given all the departures in the Eagles defense, given that the Eagles ran over teams last year, basically only played two competitive games all season where Hurts was needed late into the fourth quarter. I think we're going to get more shootouts for Philadelphia. And if people are worried about Jalen Hurts because of removing the quote unquote tush push, like, just remember, only 4 of his 15 rushing touchdowns in the regular season came on that tush push. The rest were pure, like, actually running scrambles. So the upside for the QB1 overall is still absolutely there for Hurts.
Yeah, and that defense is definitely going to be a lesser version of itself. I agree with that.
A dip from being top 3 to league average is immense for fantasy. It matters a lot.
It matters so, so much. So, yeah, the Eagles offense should still be rolling here. Quick little roundup. I'm not going to subject everybody to a bunch of other offensive lineman signings. I think we got the key ones that, like, tell us something about a team's moves. I think we handled that.
Fantasy podcast that also went as in-depth as we did on offensive linemen. I dare you.
You won't. And when you don't, give us a 5-star rating for God's sakes. No 4 stars, 5 stars for the offensive line breakdown that you got here today. Quick roundup, though, before we get out of here. The Cowboys traded a 5th-round selection for Stephon Gilmore. Obviously, that's a nice move for their defense. More Colts stuff. The Colts plan to release Matt Ryan. Of course, I could have told you that. The Colts signed kicker Matt Gay to a 4-year, $22.5 million deal. Chris Ballard, known for his patience, known for his control. He's out there slinging big deals to kickers. Matt Gay here gets a big deal for the Colts. And finally, I got to mention my guy Sterling Shepard, who was re-signed to the New York Giants on a 1-year deal. I mean, again, talk about here for a good time, not for a long time. That's going to be Sterling Shepard. He'll catch 10 balls at some game this year, and then he'll be hurt again. But my God, I'll always keep a candle lit for Sterling Shepard.
I didn't realize you were a big Shepard fan because I'm a big Shepard fan. All he does is outplay every single receiver anytime he's on the field. The issue, of course, is that he's never on the field, but 7.7 targets per game over his last 10 appearances the last 2 years. Like, just stay healthy one time, Shepard, and he's genuinely a 10-catch guy.
One time, dude.
One time.
Sterling Shepard is like, if you go back and look at, you know, this is super dork stuff, but like the guys that are 75%+ success rate versus man coverage in reception perception history, there is one glaring, like, never had a huge season outlier, and it's Sterling Shepard. I mean, that dude, because he doesn't stay healthy, but man, when he's on the field, he's like the rich man's version of Jacoby Myers, because Myers does the same thing in New England every single year. They bring in like Devontae Parker, Myers is better. You know, Kendrick Bourne, Myers is better. Nelson Aguilar, Myers is better. Like, Sterling Shepard does that no matter who else is out there. It hurts people's feelings, but he's the best Giants receiver. And I mean, hey, there's a non-0% chance for three games he's the best Giants receiver this year as well.
Don't tell anyone, but 2 years ago when they played together, all Sterling Shepard did was outperform Kadarius Toney every single week. I think that tells you what kind of player Shepard is.
God, Daigle, thank God you were on the podcast just for that. That was it. That's all I wanted to hear. Inject that into my veins. That was it. But on a serious note, that is going to do it for us. Daigle, I so appreciate you coming in for this big show, a big beefy show, literally from the timestamp, but also literally from the amount of big men that we talked about on this show. Thanks a ton, dude. Tell the people about what you got cooking up over there at 4 for 4.
It's the big meaty men slapping meat football special episode of the year. And my free agent tracker at 4 for 4 football is going strong. Again, the same analysis you heard on this show, loads more as I talk about the analysis and spin of every signing going on. And it's all free right there. Not to mention the most accurate podcast. If you type that into wherever you listen to podcasts, that's where you can be heard. I can be heard right now 2 times a week.
Maybe you just renamed the podcast there, the Big Meaty Men Slapping Meat Podcast.
Slapping Meat Podcast.
I'll talk to producer Brett.
I'll ask the SEO people how that will fare.
I mean, it might click more than the current name. I'll talk to producer Brett about that after the show. But hey, Daigle, appreciate you doing this. If you don't already, make sure you're following him on Twitter at Not Jay Daigle. You gotta love that. That's way better than an underscore, bro. And of course, I'm at Matt Harmon underscore BYB. While you're there, make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy as well. Hold on to your butts, baby. We're gonna be back late on Thursday with more free agency reactions. Until then, we're out.